Please join me in welcoming former Vermont Governor Howard Dean and independent presidential candidate Ralph Nader to NPR's Justice Talking. Governor Dean and Ralph Nader, as you'll notice, we don't have official clocks timing your responses because this isn't a presidential debate. We'd like to keep it informal. I just ask that you keep your responses as brief as you can, and if you go on, I will interrupt you and ask you to stop. Before we get going, we want to acknowledge the Annenberg Foundation Trust at Sunnylands for making this debate possible. Thanks, and let's get going. Historically, third parties have given us such reforms as the abolition of slavery, women's right to vote, the minimum wage. Governor Dean, do you believe that there is a value in third parties? Without third parties, don't we close ourselves off from change, innovation, and new direction?
I absolutely believe that. I think third parties have proved to be exceptionally helpful in changing the body politic in this country, because what happens is they rarely succeed. The only one that I can think of that succeeded in the history of the country was Abraham Lincoln, who was a third-party candidate of the Republican Party when it was a third party. And it was very important. However, this year we're threatened with an extraordinary emergency. We have the most far-right president probably in the history of the country. We have sent our troops to fight and die in a war in a foreign country without being told the truth about why they're there. We're running $500 billion deficits year after year after year. The extraordinary attack on the environment is something that I've never seen in my lifetime. And my argument is that we ought to unite behind a Democratic candidate who is progressive. We can argue about how progressive, but clearly progressive, clearly stands for a progressive income tax, clearly stands for attacking some of the corporate privileges that have been granted under this administration. My argument simply is, when the house is on fire, it's not the time to fix the furniture.
Mr. Nader, let's talk practical politics here for a minute. Many have suggested that you would have reached a wider audience with your message and would have had a stronger effect on policy if you had run in the Democratic primary rather than as a third-party candidate. So what advantages do you get from running outside the system instead of within it, and why did you make that choice?
It's called freedom. Freedom of conscience, freedom to authentically communicate the necessities of the American people without the trappings of special interest commercial cash, all kinds of lobbyists that hover and are inside the two major parties whose record has been dismal. They have gone along with big business, which is the real power in this country, to say no to universal health care, to say no to living wage for families, to say no for a fair tax system, to say no to get out of the war in Iraq. Howard Dean was an exception. To say no for addressing the major issue in this country, which is the domination of our country by a concentration of greed and power in the hands of multinational corporations that have no allegiance to our country other than to control it or abandon it as they see fit. How can that, plus really wanting to do something about poverty and the criminal injustice system and the failed war on drugs, how can all that fit inside a Democratic Party that has ignored year after year these important changes for a more just and prosperous America?
In the year 2000, a majority of Americans chose Al Gore to be their president, but Gore lost the Electoral College vote. Some people say he actually won that vote too, but lost the election in the Supreme Court. In any case, here's how you, Mr. Nader, analyzed your role in the 2000 election.
Well, in the year 2000, the Democratic pollsters' exit polls had me in the following categories. 25% of my vote would have gone to Bush, 38% would have gone to Gore, and the rest would not have voted. And now I think it'll be switched. I think now there'll be far more votes coming from independents and Republicans.
Mr. Nader, do you still believe that more Republicans will defect to you than Democrats? And how can your campaign bring Republicans into your fold if your running mate, Peter Cameo, is a former Socialist Workers' Party candidate?
First of all, he's a successful leader of the socially responsible investment movement and a successful investment advisor without shedding any of his conscientious defense of minorities in this country. Second, let me put it this way. Does anybody doubt that the Nader-Cameo ticket is being abandoned in droves by liberal Democrats? So obviously, since the polls are about a little bit ahead now than they were in 2000 for us. Other people are filling in the breach. And when you look at conservatives and Republicans who are increasingly upset with President Bush about huge deficits, their dollars going to corporate subsidies and other corporate welfare, the Big Government Patriot Act, which they hate, the sovereignty destroying impact of WTO and NAFTA, and the softness on corporate crime. They lose their 401ks to corporate crime as well, and the federal regulation of local education districts, and you got to believe that out of 50 million of these people, we're going to draw away a significant number who will either stay home because we're taking the Bush administration apart in ways that the Democrats are afraid to or too indentured to, or they'll vote for the independent candidacy of Nader Camejo, Peter Camejo being the first Latino vice presidential candidate in modern American history.
Governor Dean, here is Mark Kamleiter, co-spokesperson of Florida's Green Party.
Nobody mentions that 250,000 Democrats voted for Bush in the 2000 election. It's easy. People want to find a scapegoat. And the bottom of it all is this. They don't believe that third parties should be involved in politics.
Governor Dean, is Mr. Nader responsible for the election of President George Bush? No. And will he be a factor this time around?
I think that what's gone is gone, what's done is done. I didn't begrudge Ralph Nader running in 2000, because he had a role to play, and nobody knew the election was going to be this close, and nobody knew how dreadful George Bush was going to be as a president. But Ralph, I think you're being disingenuous about your candidacy this year, and let me tell you why. You have 46% of all your signatures to get you on the Arizona ballot turned out to be Republican supporters. You accepted the support of a right-wing fanatic Republican group that's anti-gay in order to help you get on the ballot in Oregon. You have accepted one out of every $10,000 checks that you've accepted have been from people who've already given money to Bush Cheney. Your own organizer said in Virginia that you go to tractor pulls to try to get the signatures because they think they're doing Bush a favor. This is not going to help the progressive cause in America. And the thing that upsets me so much about this is you have the right to run. You can get in bed with whoever you want to. But don't call the Democratic Party full of corporate interest. They have their problems. We all have ours. None of us are pure. And this campaign of yours is far from pure. If you are willing to accept the help of a right-wing anti-gay group to get you on the ballot, you need to repudiate those people. And as your own running mate says, send back those Republican checks.
You really are engaging.
Just a second before Ralph Nader replies. Again, let's try not to have too much applause.
You're really being very inaccurate, apart from being unfair. We have not accepted the support of any anti-gay groups. We have not accepted as fulsomely the support of Republican dollars the way the Democrats have. The Democrat fat cats, Republican fat cats pour millions into each other's party to hedge the bets. And I think the issue here is the corporate government. Let's not be distracted by the two parties that are simply proxies. We don't want to settle for the lesser of two evils in our country. We don't want to have another special interest clone in Washington. We don't want to have another Washington insider who shifts back and forth with every poll. And we don't want to have an insensitivity for the plight of workers, American workers in this country, who have lost their manufacturing jobs. All those quotes come from Howard Dean the first against John Kerry in the primary campaign. What you're hearing now is Howard Dean the second in a desperate attempt to smear our campaign, which is struggling to get on the ballot against the massive anti-civil liberties obstruction of the Democratic Party, which is the one that's really interfering with our campaign, not the press releases by Democrat Republicans who haven't produced any results.
That is also more disingenuous nonsense. The truth is that you told the people of this country that you were going to use volunteer help to get on the ballot in Arizona. You hired out that help, and that's why they made so many mistakes. That Public Citizen, which you founded, had earlier said this year that John Kerry ranks at the top of senators in standing up against political action committee money, which he has never accepted in his career, and lobbyist money. Not only has Kerry refused historically to take PAC money, but his record shows that he's been a leader for more than a decade in full reform of campaign financing, advocating for clean public money, not only for presidential, but also congressional campaigns. My purpose here is not to smear Ralph Nader.
Not at all.
Okay, guys.
You have.
Okay, guys, let's
bring some other people into this discussion.
Well, let me just finish what I'm going to say because it's important. You have an extraordinary career in standing up for the American people. You have saved lives with your extraordinary work with automobile safety. You are responsible for much of the extraordinary environmental work that has been done in this country in the last 40 years. I ask you not to turn your back on your own legacy.
Well, let me just...
A quick response.
Yeah, a quick response. Howard, look, I took you for your word when you were running in the primary, when you called John Kerry another special interest clone in Washington, when you called him turning his back on the American workers, when you called them giving George W. Bush a blank check on the war in Iraq, when you called them as voting for the Leave No Child Behind, which you in significant part opposed, and when you called him that... when you called him the lesser of two evils. Now, let's get it over with. The issue here is the corporate domination of our country that has prevented electoral reform that would have eliminated your objectives, like instant runoff voting, proportional representation, public funding of public campaigns, same-day voter registration, and making every vote count with a paper trail by these Diebold-produced voting machines.
Now
let's focus on the corporation.
Now, we're going to go into some of those issues and voting reforms in a minute, but first you're listening to NPR's Justice Talking, where Howard Dean and Ralph Nader are sparring on the role of third parties and other issues. Let's take some questions from our audience.
My name is Nick, and I'm from Washington, D.C. Regardless of how anyone feels about what the Supreme Court's ruling in Bush v. Gore enabled in terms of who gained access to the presidency, its language affirms that Article 1, Section 2 of the Constitution puts the ultimate power to determine the electors in a national election in the hands of the state legislatures. And I'm interested to hear from both of you gentlemen what position, if any, you take on the adoption of a constitutional amendment positively asserting the unambiguous right of American voters to choose their electors in national elections.
Who wants to take that first? Howard?
I think we need complete electoral reform. I think we need, first of all, that Jesse Jackson Jr.'s constitutional amendment giving Americans the right to vote ought to be passed so that the right wing of the Republican Party cannot, as they did in 2000, disenfranchise thousands and thousands of African-American voters. Secondly, we wouldn't be having this debate today if we had a system of instant runoff voting in this country. Then Ralph Nader would pose no threat to the re-election of John Kerry. He would not be facilitating the election of George Bush, the most right-wing president that we've had. If we had instant runoff voting, we could have the kind of debates that Ralph wants, open debates, because minor parties, third parties, wouldn't cause those problems. We need fundamental electoral change. I argue to you that we have a better chance of having that with John Kerry as president than we do with George Bush as president.
I would abolish the Electoral College. I think for the United States government to lecture people overseas about democracy and then turn around and say the man who got the lesser number of votes becomes president in 2000 than the person, Gore, who got more votes, is a rather difficult position to uphold. I think it's also important to recognize it's the only way third parties have had leverage over the major party candidates is to deny them votes, is to say to them that for too long they have ignored the needs of the American people. They've had their chance. How many times have they flunked? How many times do they betray us? How many times do they disrespect the voter? How many times do they become more and more similar than they are different? I'm speaking of the Republican Democratic Party. You can have all the electoral reform that you want, but if you have vigorous citizens involved, informed voters involved to take back our country and our government, the reforms just will be overridden by the overwhelming power of commercial interests that have turned Washington into corporate-occupied territory.
We're going to go to another question, but just quickly, do you both support instant runoff voting, both of you?
I do.
Yes. Well, it's good to see how it works.
And as far as you, Governor Dean, do you support or oppose the end of the Electoral College?
I have never thought about that a lot, and the problem is that my state's a small state, and if you abolish the Electoral College, nobody would ever campaign there ever again. However, I think that Ralph's point is a good one. We don't need any more candidates elected president of the United States who have 500,000 fewer votes than the person they competed in. If that's what it takes, we'll do it.
Let's take another question here on Justice Talking.
Hi, Bob Wittick, Washington, D.C. Gentlemen, a few blocks from here, the Senate's debating a constitutional moment. They're trying to decide whether to enact a federal marriage amendment. What can either and both of you say today, send a message to the Senate to stop this constitutional train wreck?
This is exactly why I'm here. I'm not here because I dislike Ralph Nader, and I'm not here because I don't think he has the right to run for president. I think he does have that right. But I'm here to argue that under John Kerry, he has publicly said that he would not ever use the Constitution of the United States to take away rights from people. This will be the first time, should this succeed, that the Constitution of the United States has been used to remove people's rights. This is none of the business of the federal government. The Defense of Marriage Act was unconstitutional. This is outrageous. States ought to be able to decide for themselves. We decided, we were the first in the nation to decide that every single gay and lesbian American deserved the same rights as everybody else did. Massachusetts has now decided, let the states do this. The only role of the federal government should be this. One, they ought to make clear that every state has a responsibility in the way that they choose to make sure that every gay and lesbian American has the same rights as everybody else. And two, the President of the United States, as I have promised and I believe Senator Kerry has promised, should make available every single immigration right, taxation right, inheritance right, and all the other 1,600 rights that are not available now to gay and lesbian Americans because they're not allowed to get married. Those rights should be available to every American, every single American, without an adjective about what that American category might, category for that American might belong to.
Thank you, Governor Dean. And now Ralph Nader.
Well, we believe in equal rights, and our position is much better than John Kerry's position. You can compare our positions by logging into our website, votenator.org. Without going into elaboration, the gay lesbian community would prefer our position to the opposition of John Kerry to what's going on in Massachusetts. Certainly his position is better than George W. Bush, but our position is the best. We've got to get rid of this discrimination, this chilling, this bigotry toward gays and lesbians that are reflected in literally hundreds and hundreds of statutes and regulations in this country.
We have a question in the audience from a very successful independent third-party candidate, John Anderson.
Thank you. John Anderson of Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and also of the Center for Voting and Democracy. I want to applaud both candidates for their endorsement of instant runoff voting. I would only hope, Governor Dean, that it will become part of the Democratic platform, a specific plank endorsing that and working in the states to make sure that state legislatures make that possible. The other point that I think should be made on electoral reform, again, I applaud Governor Dean for his willingness to debate Ralph Nader here today. But what about the coming general election campaign? Will you and the Democratic Party insist that we reform the present debate process, which has become the property of the so-called Commission on Presidential Debates, just another name for the two major parties? Would you accept the kind of reform in that area that would say that if a candidate has ballot access to the extent that he could win a majority in the Electoral College, if he has the qualifications that would be manifest by a national poll showing that at least half of the American voters in September would like to hear that candidate in the debates? Will you support the inclusion of an open debate process that would give a third party or independent candidate the right to participate in those debates?
The way you asked the question is very interesting because you also laid out a series of thresholds. I don't care who runs the debate. If you want somebody else to run this, if you think it's the property of the two parties, fine, let's give it to somebody else to run it. But there does have to be a threshold. Right now there is a threshold. It's 15% in the polls. Well, maybe that's not the right threshold. I just went through a primary where there were nine candidates on the stage at the same time. That was not much very enlightening to most voters. It was
but
a good exercise.
But on the other hand, it was really interesting, right? Well, I mean,
I thought it was incredibly dull, and most people
I
thought did too.
I remember, you know, when I looked at the debates and I saw, you know, Al Sharpton and Carol Moseley Braun and you and Dennis Kucinich, I thought it was a lot more witty and engaging than I think the possible snooze we're going to face in the presidential party
debate. Well, the bottom line is I agree with the premise that the debates ought to include everybody. The question is, what kind of a threshold do you use? Because sometimes there are 20 people on the ballot, and obviously it's not practical to have a 20-person forum up on the stage, or even a 9-person forum.
Well, people want to get involved in opening the debates, as John Anderson suggested. And I believe, by the way, proportional representation is critical to instant runoff voting working better. Log into opendebates.org, because the threshold's a reasonable one. If a majority of the American people, as they expressed in 2000, in poll after poll, want a candidate on the debates, that ought to be enough. And a majority of the American people wanted me and Buchanan on the debates in 2000. It isn't because they just viewed the debates as a cure for insomnia. I think they wanted a broader agenda. They wanted more exciting issues. They wanted to get rid of all the taboos that put marbles in the mouths of the two major presidential candidates, hemming and hawing. So 5% in the polls is one criteria. A majority want you on is another, and that ought to be good. What are they afraid of? I mean, what? No, the audience for the debates are going down every 4 years. They were down to 38 million last time, in contrast to 92 million when Perot was on the debates. There's no other way to reach tens of millions of Americans other than go through the gateway dominated by the two parties. I mean, what other democracy allows that? You can campaign all over the country for the largest arenas, like the biggest arenas that we filled in the year 2000. We only reached 2% of the people we could have reached on just one debate. What is the reason for all this sanctioning, all this restriction, all this politics of fear from new ideas and fresh vistas and a record of 40 years of accomplishment?
Let's go on. Ralph Nader has accused the Democratic Party of waging a battle to prevent him from getting on the ballot in Arizona, Texas, Illinois, Florida, Michigan. Oregon. Governor Dean, Oregon. Governor Dean, is the Democratic Party trying to prevent third parties and independents from getting on the ballot?
Not to my knowledge. I refuse to participate in anything like that because I don't appreciate that. Some of my former staff members are doing that, and I told them I wasn't going to have anything to do with them because they're the same people who tried to, same people running that group who tried to knock me out of the caucus in Iowa.
David Jones.
That's right. Not my favorite person. You all know him well, right? Jeannie knows him very well. Here's the problem with what's going on. I do believe that, Ralph, that your access, your attempt to get on the ballots is fatally flawed. I don't believe, if you really did go out and get all those signatures in Arizona, it would be great, but the truth is, a lot of them were illegal. And it's not picking on you. This happens to every candidate. If you pay somebody to go get signatures, they generally do a much lousier job than if you use volunteers. It is true that the Oregon Family Council, which is a virulently anti-gay right-wing group, called up all their folks and tried to get them to go to the Oregon Convention to sign your petition. I don't think that's the way to change the party. I agree with much of what you say, but the way to change the country is not to do it as any means to the end. The way to change the country is not to get in bed with right-wing anti-gay groups to get you on the ballot. That can't work. It can't work. The problem with the democracy is that the two major parties have tried to use any means to an end. I think there's a big difference between the Democrats and the Republicans. I'll grant you that there's significant corporate influence that we don't like, and I campaigned against in the primary. I'm not running for president right now, not just because I lost in Iowa, but because I made the calculation that if I did, I would take away votes that otherwise would go to John Kerry, and the result was going to be the reelection of George Bush. That is a national emergency, and we cannot have it.
Well, I think just what you said about that group was a legitimate smear. You know what a legitimate smear is, Howard? It's a smear premeditated and knowing. We don't even know this group. Don't try to tar us with this. There have been groups that have supported your campaign you wouldn't want to have breakfast with, even if you were starving.
Then just renounce them. That's all I
have.
Well,
fine. I renounce them. You got anyone else to renounce? Do you renounce Pfizer and Chevron and other companies who were criminally convicted of crimes by the federal government, giving millions of dollars in the year 2000 to the Democrat Party, and they did not return the money? That's a matter of record.
Exactly why I ran for president. I don't want that stuff anymore. And we're going to have real campaign financing with public financing of campaigns in this country, but it's not going to happen under George Bush's
presidency. Okay, so you'll urge John Kerry to return all money coming from corporate executives who presided over corporations who were either pleaded guilty or were convicted of antitrust, environmental, labor, and other crimes.
I will urge him to do that if you will give back the 10% of your $1,000 contributions that came from people who, all like Richard Egan, the ambassador to Ireland appointed by George Bush.
I wasn't aware that he was a corporate criminal. He's an American citizen who might be, is a Republican, just happens to believe in civil liberties, maybe. I don't even know the man.
Well, but, let's go on.
You know, Republicans are human beings, too.
Let's go on.
The right-wingers may not be.
Let's go on to another question here on Justice Talking, where we're talking with Ralph Nader and Howard Dean. We're debating third parties in the 2004 election. Let's take another question from our audience.
Hi, my name is Matt Keller from Washington, D.C., and I am a big fan of third-party politics. I think it's something that we need to integrate into our federal system. But I had I was fortunate enough to spend a lot of time living over in Germany, where they have a very strong Green Party. And I'm sort of questioning the tactics in which Mr. Nader is taking on trying to establish that party as a third party, the Green Party, independent party. The Green Party in Germany was able to establish itself more at the local and state level, where they were able to become politicians in those areas. And they slowly gained confidence and familiarity by the people, able to get into the... I cut off you. And do you think that it might be more effective to take a similar route, which in turn would add to the long-term future stability and popularity of the Green Party, instead of running for a presidency in which you really have no chance to win?
Well, I don't really see the contrast here. It would be good to have proportional representation. In West Germany, or in Germany now, when the Greens got over 5% of the vote, they got over 5% of the parliament. If they get 10%, they get 10% of the parliament. In this country, you can get 49% of the vote, and you get nothing. So a lot of people's votes don't mean anything at all, assuming they even vote. It is important to keep in mind that our divided power, separation of power system sometimes has a good asset in stopping things, but it's much more sluggish in getting new frontiers reached, new things done. That's one reason why in Western Europe they came in after World War II with universal health care, a living wage, good benefits, 4 to 6 weeks paid vacation, good public transit. We could have had all this here had we had a parliamentary system, actually. But now, with the filibuster and the obstruction, it's very hard. It's like they've made our society one that's stuck in traffic. We have far more problems in this country than we deserve, far more solutions on the shelf than we apply because of this kind of gridlock, this winner-take-all system.
We have another question here from our audience. Let's hear it.
Hi, I'm Linda Shade from Sycamore Park, Maryland, and I wanted to know why Mr. Nader and Mr. Dean think that Kerry is running to the right of President Bush on the occupation in Iraq, and what should the peace movement's response be?
Excellent question. The Nader Cameo ticket is the only avowedly and determined anti-war candidacy. We want to have a responsible six-month withdrawal of the U.S. military and corporate occupation, internationally supervised elections, so that the Iraqi people don't feel that they're facing a permanent military occupation, a control of their oil resources, and a puppet government. If they feel that, the majority of the Iraqis are going to support the insurgency. They're not going to distance themselves from the insurgency. And John Kerry voted for the war, as Howard Dean reminded us many times during the primary days. George W. Bush launched our country into a war in Iraq based on a platform of fabrications, deceptions, and lies, and did it in an unconstitutional manner. So that's one reason why we need more distinctions in the candidates. We need more voices, and we need more choices. Furthermore, it looks like John Kerry's running to the right of George W. Bush on the Israeli-Palestine issue. Why, if the U.S. government is really interested in peace between the Israelis and Palestinians, why doesn't it support the broad and deep Palestinian and Israeli peace movement, especially the Israeli peace movement that's put 120,000 people in a protest demonstration in Tel Aviv the other day and represents former legislators, existing legislators, former ministers of justice, former generals, former combat officers
who refused to fight in the West Bank. I'm going
to
have to let Governor Dean get his licks in here.
Let me just say a couple of things. First of all, I'm not convinced that John Kerry's running to George Bush's right. That's hard to do. Secondly, I think that if Ralph were as concerned about the war, and I think you are deeply concerned about the war, but then what was the reason for recommending that John Edwards be John Kerry's running mate when John Edwards also voted for the war? I don't understand that at all.
Because everyone but you on the vice presidential slate, you weren't on for obvious reasons, Howard, because you were an insurgent who is now adopting the role of being a detergent of the dirty linen of the Democratic Party. Gephardt was for the war. Jeff Hart was for the war and so on. That's the answer to your question.
All right.
Edwards is good on torts, on civil justice, and right of Americans
to
sue.
Let me just see, if I'm going to be the detergent, let me explain why I think that that's necessary. Here's what makes me so passionate about this issue. It's not a dislike for third parties. I think third parties have contributed a lot. It's not a dislike for the platform that Ralph's talking about. I do have some concerns with the means to the end. But the real problem is that the people are going to suffer from your candidacy should you take more votes, as you did in 2004, from John Kerry than you did from Bush, are our people. Your people and my people and the people of the folks in this room. There are kids who are losing health insurance every day because of what George Bush is doing. If he gets reelected, those people are going to suffer. There are schools that are going down the tubes in inner cities and rural areas all over America. Those people are going to suffer if George Bush gets reelected. There are not just Americans dying every day in Iraq. There are Iraqis dying every day in Iraq. Those people are going to suffer if George Bush gets reelected. And so what I see in this candidacy is the perfect becoming the enemy of the good. The reason I chose not to run as a third party myself, which took me about 5 seconds to think about, after I had really endured the slings and arrows of having been the front runner of the Democratic nomination, is in the long run, it's not important that Howard Dean be president or that Ralph Nader be president. In the long run, this is about American people who can't defend themselves against the kind of administration that George Bush has. And that's why I wish you were on our team, Ralph, because we really need you.
My answer? I'd just like to say, what have the Democrats done about the poor in this country? What have they done about the criminal
and
justice system?
And I'll talk to you.
Corporate prisons. They've generated as many loopholes in the tax system for their corporate benefactors as anyone. Neither Howard Dean nor John Kerry will attack the military budget, which is swollen, redundant, and full of corrupt contracts that are eating half of the whole military budget now is one half of the federal government's operating expenditures. That draws money away from clinics and schools and public drinking water systems and public libraries and public transit and the environment. And the Democrats are fully complicit. John Kerry will not challenge the bloated military, redundant military budget. And if he doesn't do that, he cannot pay for all those programs that Howard referred to so sympathetically. The Democrats haven't done anything on attacking corporate crime. They haven't done anything on corporate welfare. You look at John Kerry's website, there's nothing on corporate crime under crime. There's nothing on corporate welfare, bleeding hundreds of billions of dollars of taxpayers from the necessity of the American people. You put that rap on anyone, I could put it on you if I wanted.
That's what Howard...
Let's talk about the future here and assume that we're all well-intentioned toward the American people.
Okay,
Wait a minute. Okay. While you evaluate what Ralph Nader just said about the Democrats, just think about who put Medicare in here. Without a single Republican vote, everybody over 65 now has health insurance in this country because of Lyndon Johnson and the Democrats. Who did Medicaid? Children all over America have health insurance. Who did the earned income tax credit? You know who that was? It was Richard Nixon with Democratic support. It makes a big difference whether you have a Democratic or a Republican administration.
That was the old Democratic
All
party.
I'm asking is that we not let the perfect become the enemy of the good, because of this election, it matters. I believe in most of the reforms that Ralph Nader talks about. He has been a hero of mine because of his exceptional, extraordinary career. But I am desperate to send George Bush back to Crawford, Texas, and we need your help in doing it.
Okay, I'm going to lighten things up a minute. Just take this away, because we could continue this way all along. And I just want to ask you a couple of actually the most difficult questions you're going to face, because they require really short answers. So are you ready? Are you ready? Okay, one sentence. Howard Dean, who is your favorite president?
Two. George Washington and Harry Truman, for different reasons, obviously.
And Ralph Nader, yours?
Abraham Lincoln and Thomas Jefferson.
Governor Dean, would you take a cabinet position in a Democratic administration if it was offered to you? Oh, you know, health and human services, surgeon general, you know.
I haven't made any deals like that, but if Ralph comes on board, maybe we can both get cabinet positions.
Well, that was my next question. Senator, if Senator John Kerry wins and asks you, Mr. Nader, to be head of the Environmental Protection Agency, would you take the job? You might get a pension.
No, no. Are you supposed to be impartial? The answer is no, because I want to be, after the election, what Howard Dean told me he wanted to be during the election when he lost the primaries, is to be a hair shirt for the Democrats. a real hair shirt, not a linen handkerchief.
If you could give Howard Dean, Mr. Nader, if you could give Howard Dean one piece of political advice, what would it be?
I would tell him to explain to the American people why Howard Dean the First comments on John Kerry, which were unbelievably searing, makes me look modest by comparison, why they are no longer part of Howard Dean the Second's political repertoire.
When you're running against somebody for office, the fact is that it's tough and you focus on the differences. Okay. When you're running as a team, you got to look at the fact that the differences between any of the nine of us that ran for the presidency are so, the differences between any of us are so small compared to the difference between us and George Bush that we are on the same team. We need to focus on one thing in this election, sending George Bush back to Crawford, Texas, and then we have a chance at instigating some of the reforms that we're both talking about.
Governor Dean, what one suggestion would you give Ralph Nader?
Lighten up.
Howard.
Well, that's better than what I thought he was going to say. Hey, listen, have you been on Saturday Night Live four times, Howard?
Are you kidding? I don't even dare go on The Daily Show.
Okay, Howard, in the last few weeks, the Boondocks Conference,